They're coming to get you, Barbara. You're still afraid.
Stop it! You're ignorant!
Hello, and welcome to Night of the Living Academic. This is Caitlin, and I welcome all horror films into my heart with open arms, even the misfit ones.
And this is your co-host, Matt. I also have room for horror in my heart, but I have a thing called standards.
And this is episode 16, and we are calling it the 2019 retrospective.
Yeah, so we're doing things a little different today. We are not talking about any particular movie in general, but actually all the movies we covered in 2019, which includes all the movies basically since we started this podcast in July, June, something like that.
Sometime in the summer. Yeah. And we might also talk about some movies that just happened to come out in 2019 that we didn't get a chance to cover because, again, we didn't start until like July or something.
Yeah. So a couple of segments here. Should be a lot of fun. I think it's a nice way to end the year and kick off 2020. Yeah. We could show this all these movies aside today.
Yeah. I guess before we start talking, we do have a beer to go with this episode today, so I'll just get that out of the way before we start diving in. But we're drinking a pretty basic one. It's the Sam Adams Cold Snap White Ale with spices. It's a limited release. I guess we're sort of welcoming the winter with this one and saying goodbye to 2019. It's extra good for this episode just because we plan to finish this six-pack on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, not the most indie or microbrews out there we've tried, but, you know, Sam Adams does a decent enough job. Yeah, so.
It's really good, actually. I think you're going to like this one because it's a bit sour, actually.
Okay. All right. I'm excited for New Year's. I'm not drinking today, though.
All right, so Matt, you're sort of taking over the real hosting job totally
for
this episode.
Yeah, let's just do a quick summary of horror news, which, or not even news, let's just talk about movies that we've seen recently and a quick summary. I think, well, there's two, right? Star Wars, Rise of Skywalker. What, Star Wars 3?
There's three movies. There's Star Wars, Rise of the Skywalker. It's the Skywalker?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Uncut Gems.
Yep.
And then we also had that, I keep forgetting the name, but the Ryan Reynolds movie on Netflix.
All right. Underground 6.
There we go. So directed by Michael Bay.
Michael Bay. Rise of the Skywalker. Yeah, it was a Star Wars movie of this new franchise. Better than Phantom Menace, I guess, but
still. But at least Phantom Menace was trying to do something different. That's my major complaint with this new franchise, that it's just sort of recycling the original trilogy's plot lines in a lot of ways, and,
you know,
just sort of like doing fan service.
One commentary I read that made a lot of sense to me was, like, at the very least, the first three prequels expanded the universe.
Yeah.
So we ended up with things with, like, new droids, and most particularly the best thing about that prequel series was pod racing. Mm-hmm. So we at least got that. That, like, didn't happen in these three sequels.
Yeah.
Like, it's just revisiting the same planets, same baddies. I mean, literally the same emperor from the first series.
Yeah. And it's weird stuff, too, like, someone was posting on Twitter a whole sort of list of things that doesn't make sense about Rise of the Skywalker that just seems like lazy writing in a lot of ways.
So lazy.
The one that's like sort of sticking in my head, because I don't know, I loved Star Wars when I was younger, I guess, and I was really into everything, but I don't know any of the names or the tech or anything, so a lot of it didn't stick in my head. But one thing was the fact that at the end, Rey is burying Leia and Luke's lightsabers on Tatooine, and it's a really weird location for Leia, who only knows, she said that Leia only probably only knows Tatooine as the place where she was a sex slave.
Yeah.
And then the Luke's lightsaber was somehow Anakin's lightsaber, even though Luke dropped it. So there was all this other stuff too, which is like another weird choice to be burying Anakin's lightsaber in Tatooine as well. But again, it just seems like that sort of fan servicey thing, like, oh, the fans will recognize Tatooine, so that's where they must be buried.
I mean, it was clear. It was like, you know, Aunt Beru's uncle and Aunt Beru's like water moisture farm.
Yeah.
It was like right back where it all started. Not that we needed it to be cyclical anyways, but yeah, well, whatever.
I liked Baba, though, or whatever his name
Baba
is.
Baba Jar, I don't know.
That cute little guy.
It's the other cute thing, because they didn't have Baby Yoda in there, so they need to throw in something porg-like.
And they barely gave us any pork, so I wasn't a fan of that.
Nah, just lazy writing all around. But I never had high hopes for this in the first place, so... even then, I still came out kind of disappointed, you know? I guess it's weird, because I really hate throwing myself in with the label as a Star Wars fan, but deep down, I know I care about the movies. It meant a lot to me growing up. But, I just have low standards, I guess.
And there's, like, so much promise, though, for, like, what it could be, you know? Like, it could be so much fun. And, like, what you were saying, too, I felt the same way that... when watching this Star Wars, because I guess because we had seen it so recently, but all I could think about every now and then was, I wish we were just watching Cats again. Because there were just a lot of real dragging moments that just sort of boring at times. And I was like, I was having so much fun at Cats. Why am I refusing myself that fun and being here at Star Wars right now?
I agree. You know what, though? I think, you know, other people are doing Star Wars light in better ways. So I always said like Thor. Thor Ragnarok is like the best Star Wars movie after the original.
I liked Rogue One, though.
Yeah, Rogue One was fine. And I'm not going to play it again, but somehow you should check out the Mass Effect series. I thought that's a really great Star Wars-esque universe. But moving on, we also watched Uncut Gems. I don't want to spend too much time about this, just except to say I thought it was an amazing movie. Never felt that high level of anxiety and pressure in a movie consistently throughout the movie. So I think horror fans who like that feeling of anxiety and being on a roller coaster of like scares, even though there's no like scares per se, they would really enjoy Uncut Gems.
Yeah, I felt this, like, I guess the affect of watching Uncut Gems for me was very similar to how I felt watching Midsommar.
Right.
Like, even though Midsommar's more traditional horror, I felt both of them just like this constant sense of anxiety throughout the entire thing.
Yeah.
I now have one of these Fitbit watch things, Versa. So I was able to see my heart rate while watching Uncut Gems, and I did get into the like weight loss heart rate territory.
Yeah. It's stressful. And I think the difference is that like Midsommar is the anticipation of fear, whereas it's not like fear in Uncut Gems, it's just anticipation.
Yeah. And he like constantly is doing like, I just needed him to like take a break. Yeah. Like, everything he does is like making it worse and worse and worse.
No, yeah. And then the film techniques too, like we said, everybody was mic'd up at all times. Yeah. So there's a constant cacophony of dialogue.
Yeah.
That, like, is such a excellent use of that technique. But, you know, going in, we both are big fans of Adam Sandler, both unironically as a dramatic actor and somewhat ironically as a comedic actor. Maybe not.
Not really.
You less so. You actually just
I think he's very funny. And I'll always love, like, the classics like Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore.
But we've talked about Punch Drunk Love. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. And obviously he's a killer in that. And he did fantastic in Uncut Gems. I might even say even better in Uncut Gems than he did in Punch Drunk Love.
I think so. And then, he was almost unrecognizable in Uncut
Gems. He blended into that role real well. And then also, you know, Safdie Brothers, we watched Good Time early in this year for the first time. And yeah, it's amazing. And Uncut Gems really is showing that they have a style and an attitude that is unmatched in anything, at least in my from what I've seen in film history. And I love it.
Yeah.
So, Uncut Gems, watch it.
Mm-hmm. And a great pairing with A24. Like, I feel like they make a lot of sense being with A24.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the closest thing.
I agree. And then finally, talking about this Netflix original series, movie, Underground 6, starring Ryan Reynolds and other people. I
can't remember. A whole crew.
It's a crew movie, getting the crew together.
Mm-hmm. A little heisty.
Yeah, I guess. Like Mission Impossible style, except it's directed by Michael Bay, and it's at the level of Michael Bay at his most Michael Bayist, to the point where it's almost like camp.
Yes, I said this feels like action camp.
Yeah.
Because everything was like purposefully excessive, and I loved every second of it.
So it's, critics have been kind of bashing on it, but like, I think it's, like you said, that level of excessiveness that made me enjoy it quite a bit, because I'm not like, you know, this, I don't know if for better or for worse, I'm not even treating this as like a real entry into like, high cinema, but it is just, I mean, it belongs in cinema, but in the level of camp and genre.
Yeah, so. I think so. And it's a lot of fun. This is like what, if Star Wars was like this, I would have loved it.
Yeah.
Because this is like, this is what you want from, or at least this is what I want going into an action film. I just want sort of this like balls to the wall, special effects and stunt work.
The real disregard offered to civilians.
Yes. And like that whole, the opening car chase scene was insane. Like when we watched it, Matt asked, how did no one die?
I was impressed with how they filmed it. It was amazing. Yeah, I don't know how they got away with some of those techniques.
And to sort of connect it too to this podcast, it's the plot of it basically is like Dexter, but like a global or like international group that does what Dexter does.
And they're amateurish too.
Yeah.
They're just kind of flying by the seat of their pants. But overall good. It is Ryan Reynolds being Ryan Reynolds.
Sure. Yeah, he's a little Deadpool-y here and there.
Yeah. But worth the time if you want to go into it as camp or a genre film, you know, and don't go into it trying to think you're watching a stellar movie.
Yeah.
So that's about covering those rest of the movies we watched in 2019. And now I think we can talk about some horror news coming in 2020. Let's get that out of the way.
So it's really all I have really is like a list of, well, two TV shows and then a bunch of movies that are coming out in 2020 that I'm most excited about. I don't have everything that's coming out in 2020. I just sort of did a quick, well, some of the things I knew about already, and then I did a quick internet search and I just pulled what actually made me excited. So I'll start with the television show. So one of them is not technically a 2020 release, but that's You Season 2, which is already out, but we haven't started it yet. And I've been saying a very fun thing, which is new year, new you. And I don't know why they didn't use that, because it's nice and
maybe
easy.
Maybe Hulu
or Netflix.
Copyrighted. No, because Hulu's got that
movie. Oh, the movie. Yeah. There we go. Well, I'm excited for that. I guess there's not much else to say, except I'm excited. And then the other show, which is actually coming out later in 2020, also on Netflix, is the new Hill House series, this time in Bly Manor of Henry James's Turning of the Screw, which I'm super excited for. So
directed by Mike
Flanagan? Yes.
Okay.
And I think he wrote both of them.
I don't know.
I think maybe. I don't know. But yeah, it's definitely Mike Flanagan again.
All right.
So that should be good. And actually, Bent Neck Lady, I forget her name, but she's actually in both the You Season 2, and I believe she's coming back for Hill House Season 2.
A bit of a Netflix darling there.
Yeah. Okay, so then getting to the movies. So we have our next of the new Halloween trilogy coming out. The first one came out in 2018, just called Halloween. This one coming out in 2020 is called Halloween Kills. Very excited. We have Lee Wannell's Invisible Man, which we've already discussed on this podcast. I forget which episode. It looks awesome. And that's going to be coming out soon, like February or something. Then we have our third Conjuring, The Conjuring 3. I'm very excited. What else do we have? We've got the Grudge reboot. That looks pretty good. We've got Antlers, which we've got Jesse Plemons in that, along with Guillermo del Toro producing. Some other famous people too, but on this podcast, we stan Jesse Plemons pretty hard. The Candyman reboot's coming out, which Peele is producing and writing a screenplay for, so that should be pretty good. Chris Rock's Saw 9, which is titled The Organ Donor, is coming out. I'm very excited for that.
Speaking of Chris Rock, we also saw him in that title up preview of Fargo season 4.
Oh yeah, that. Oh yeah, we should. So it list seems like that
he's gonna have
too.
A big year. Yeah.
Fargo, that's another good horror adjacent.
Yeah.
What else? Oh, this movie called Antebellum, which is Blumhouse produced. I don't know too much about it, but it looked good. Another Purge movie, Purge 5. Ugh. Very excited.
They're fine.
Fantasy Island, which is also another Blumhouse. So again, I don't know too much. And then I'm thinking of Ending Things, which is going to be a Netflix original movie. Also has Jesse Plemons, and it's directed by someone who I told you. I forget. Charlie Kaufman.
Oh, Charlie Kaufman. Yeah. Yes. That's going to be very weird because I love Charlie Kaufman, and I kind of feel like he might be a director / writer. He's actually better as a writer, in my opinion. He's not that much of a director.
Yeah.
But you would find him insufferable. I love him.
Interesting.
So it's weird that he's doing a horror movie.
And Tony Collette's in it, too.
Yeah. He knows how to get in your head a little bit, but more in a, how do you want to frame it? Neurotic, psyche.
All right. Well, I'm interested. It says it's based on a novel. So maybe that will help him with the... directing.
Sure.
Those are my sort of 2020 picks of what I'm most excited about. And
okay.
I can't wait. And I hope we cover them on this
podcast.
I'm sure
we'll cover most of those things.
And I hope they're all happy, happy, happy reviews.
You know, here's a hot take that I want to quickly mention. Mm-hmm. I think Blumhouse is kind of diluting his franchise a bit.
Oh my God.
Maybe
that is a hot take.
Black Christmas really turned me off.
I think that's all it is, and you're being rude. You're letting Black Christmas color everything. Out.
I mean, I think we're coming to the age where some of these studios, I'm not sure, production companies have a really defined quality to it, and Blumhouse is a little all over the place compared to A24
genre.
Yeah.
That's his whole thing, though, that he's going to do big budget, low budget, everything in between horror.
He should subset them so I know which movies I want to see. Because I want to see all the Hereditaries and Witches and all
Hereditary is those are two A24s.
Oh, they have no wonder.
Oh, my God.
But Blumhouse, Get Out. Okay, so let me differentiate Get Out from Black Christmas. Have two separate parts of your company. That I know what I can't skip, please. Jason Blumhouse, if you could do us a favor, Caitlin could do that. She could be.
Oh,
the
okay.
One.
Then yeah, I'm into this now.
Yeah, making those decisions.
I just look forward to our Invisible Man episode where you apologize for everything rude you've ever said about it.
If you watched the trailers, you already watched the whole movie. So.
Yeah, right. That's Blumhouse and Lee Wan both on Twitter have told us, no, you're wrong. There's more to it than what the trailer tells you.
Okay, some lame twist at the end. I don't care. All right, so moving on. Thanks for that horror news update.
You're welcome.
2020 seems like another good year for our podcast. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about 2019. The first question I want to ask you is, what do you think of all the movies we've covered on this podcast is the most overrated by you? And what would your new score be? And just a little bit about, why you are shifting that score.
So this is really hard because I pretty much agree with everything that I gave a review to.
So even if you're going to have... I still want you to pick something, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a big shift.
Yeah. So what I chose based on that list was I probably overrated Cabin Fever a little bit, which I hate to say.
7.6 is not necessarily been super high. But, I mean, it's a very above average score, I would say.
Yeah. I don't know.
So what would you need?
Just because I had to choose it. I don't know. 7.5.
Okay. <all right. laughs> So it's fair to say that you probably didn't overrate anything.
It's I feel like I overrated... Probably, but in my heart, that's where I feel like it should probably be. But I also can see, I don't know, when I looked at the list in the order that I put it in, it did seem pretty higher up than maybe it ought to be.
So you think you would shift it around, to be below something else? Here, we're looking at our little Airtable by it, and I'm going to sort it for Caitlin right now.
No, it's just that...
Cabin Fever is better than Terrifier. Well, you like it more than Terrifier, and it's below Joker.
Yeah, So I guess, I don't know, I think I just like Terrifier even more. Okay. So maybe that's what I need to shift. And I think maybe it's just, I don't know.
Why don't we just swap the scores? Because Terrifier, I got 7.5, and Kevin, if you got 7.6, we could swap it.
Swap it up.
And then you think that's fair?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, because I can't stop thinking about Terrifier ever since we saw it. I think just Art the Clown, such a good villain, and it's just something very different and very new, and yeah.
Okay, that's fair. I think Terrifier is a lot more fun to watch than Cabin Fever, so I don't have any qualms about that. So for me, I was really high on Haunt when we watched it. And I still think it is an excellent movie for what it is trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'll still give it that. And in achieving a movie where it's trying to deliver on the experience of being in an extreme haunted house, I thought it was, again, excellent. But as my fourth favorite movie we've watched, above Joker, I don't think that is a fair assessment. I think I was just going a little too far overboard with loving how well it did the experience of a extreme haunted house and not really paying attention to the rest of the movies, which is a little bit flawed of when they are actually being attacked by the guys running the house and no longer being part of that experience. So it had a pretty liberally high score of 8.4. And like I said, it's tied for third place, actually, not even in fourth place. I think I need to amend
Christmas Evil.
Yeah. To actually, you're going to like this one. I think Saw is a better movie than Haunt.
I agree.
So it's going below Saw at a 7.7. So it's dropping down from 8.4 to 7.7, which puts it below Saw.
I'm shocked at how high Dr. Sleep is for you, by the way.
Really? Dr. Sleep, the more I think about it, the more I really feel like Dr. Sleep is a strong movie.
Hmm.
Not a excellent A-plus movie, obviously, but I think it did a lot of things right. If you approach it not as a horror movie, and if you approach it as like this action-adventure, Harry Potter-esque YA movie, I liked it a lot in that regard.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe it has slightly something to do with expectations set by It series.
Sure.
Which I'd much rather watch Dr. Sleep than It. Either Chapter 1 or Chapter 2.
Oh, especially I disagree.
Especially Chapter 2.
I would rather watch It Chapter 1 than Dr. Sleep.
Dr. Sleep was more engaging for me than It Chapter 1. I found Chapter 1 to be kind of boring. Yeah, as well made as it is, as great a job those kids did, and some of the actually good horror sequences in it, I still found it kind of boring, to be honest.
Okay.
Pennywise doesn't do anything for me too much.
Okay.
I think watching, what's his name? Tim
Curry?
Tim Curry's It, like, that seems more fun to me than...
It is very fun.
So, anyways.
All right. Well, I am happy that Saw is so high up in your books.
Yeah. I was, you know, Saw was one of the first movies we covered, and I think I was leaning hard too much on trying to be this other voice of criticism. But realistically, I don't dislike Saw. I think it's a fine movie. I think it's overvalued for how well it's written. I still maintain that it is
written
a bit sloppy in its in the writing of it. And there's a little... a bit of smoke and mirrors going on to make you forget that there's some
smoke
lazy writing.
Mirrors, lazy get out of here. There.
But, you know, for where it was in time of movies and what it did, I like it. So,
all right.
It shouldn't be that surprising it's that high up, but I guess it is surprising based on our episode that we did on it, how much I was hating on it.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's talk about now our most underrated movie. And literally, when we say underrated, this means, you know, scores that we think we gave it that are too low.
Yes.
So Caitlin, which one is your most underrated?
So I was debating, actually, a little bit between Crawl, Harpoon, and Haunt, which are all sort of around the same place here, 6.3, 6.4, 6.5. But I thought I should just choose one to sort of rescue and push up more. Mm-hmm. So if I was to rescue one, I would rescue Haunt, which is funny because you just said you overrated Haunt. Mm-hmm. I think I underrated it a little bit.
Well, my new score for Haunt is 7.7. It used to be 8.4, and you had rated it 6.5. So that was at one point, probably not much longer, our biggest discrepancy.
Yeah. Okay. So that makes sense. So Haunt, I would bump up. Probably not too high up, though, because...
Wow, you have a lot of confidence in your original ratings.
Yeah, I do. Which is surprising, since I don't really think about it too much. I would bump it up above Halloween 3, but below Christmas Evil. So I think I'll bump it up to 7.2.
7.2.
And yeah, all three of those movies, Crawl, Harpoon, Haunt, I really liked. I think I just was having a hard time with the rating system, but I think this order's better now. Haunt, I think also maybe because Halloween 3, I wanted to celebrate it extra hard, since you were going against it extra hard. And so that's why Halloween 3 went above Haunt. But I think, honestly, I think Haunt, you deserve to be up there at 7.2. It is really fun, and like you were saying, it does recreate that experience of going through a haunted house. And I love watching those movies on YouTube, and also documentaries. And I think the other thing that made me underrate it a little bit was because of how much I love Hell House LLC. I think that's still my favorite haunted Halloween haunt movie is always going to be until a better one comes, but Hell House LLC. And if you haven't seen it, go check it out on Shudder, because that's a real good one, especially if you like found footage.
I like that one a lot too.
Me too. Yeah. But yeah, Hunt still did a really good job.
Okay. So my most underrated movie is, speaking of which, and I actually pointed this out the other day when we were talking about Black Christmas, how much I disliked it and how much it made me realize Halloween 3 Season of the Witch is not a movie as I originally, at least my score. It doesn't deserve the 4.2 that I gave.
I agree.
It definitely is very B level, and it takes a lot of liberties because it is in the B-level type movie. Like, it just didn't seem like it cared about making a good movie. And I guess that earns itself a little bit of respect. But overall, I'm thinking 4.2, did I want to scrape my brain out like I did with Black Christmas, right? I think anything below a 5.0 has to mean that, like, I am, like, ready to just leave the theater.
Okay. Wait, under what?
Under 5.0.
Okay.
Although, maybe It Chapter 2, I'm seeing it's a 5.7. It should go lower. But 4.0, like, Halloween 3 Season in a Witch, it's got a catchy jingle. Some of those deaths are just bizarre and fun.
Yes.
So, I'm actually going to give it... This is going to be a big jump, just because I do think 4.2 is very low. I'm just going to give it right at a 5.0.
Nice.
Which, still far below you, but, you know, I think that just goes to show our different preferences and stuff. All right, so there we go. We got some changes for most underrated and most overrated. I think I liked where we landed with those scores.
Agreed.
Now, a question I do want to bring up is, what are our biggest differences? Well, let's very quickly go what we agreed upon most.
Okay.
And this is not surprising. Crawl, was it our first episode ever? It might have been first episode.
I think so.
Exactly on the same page. 6.3s all around.
Wow.
So no differences there. And we ended up Terrifier and Lighthouse, we also agreed on.
Only, just by
.1s of differences there. Now for our largest disambiguation between scores. Halloween Season of the Witch is actually still pretty high up there at 1.8, but it's not the highest. Black Christmas 1974, you had rated it an 8.5, so this puts it up in
very
high range.
Yeah, it's a solid slasher film.
Okay, I gave it a 6.3, which is, you know, I think middling. I don't want to use the word average because that means something, but just, you know, it's a okay movie for me.
Okay.
So 2.2. Any surprises there? Any last minute ditch efforts to try to convince me that I'm mistaken in that rating? Or do you really think you know, and you can see why I'm giving this 6.3.
I don't think I could change your mind, but I'm not really surprised either, but not because I think Black Christmas deserves what you're giving it, but because I feel like you're not a slasher guy. I don't think you, like, necessarily get that genre, or, like, I don't think the genre speaks to you in the way that the genre speaks to me, I guess. Like, I love slashers. If everything on this list would be a slasher, it would be hard to give a good rating for each, because I even a badly made one, I'll love it. As long as it follows the formula. It's something very comforting. And I think Black Christmas, since it was before that pattern it was even established, it's fun to watch that just from, like, sort of, I guess, an academic perspective. But even as it was, I love that shot of Billy with that one eyeball. So exciting, and the kills are really fun, and yeah. I think all the characters, it's not just the final girl that's a fun character, and that's pretty unique, too.
Okay. All right. I certainly see all the merit that all the things that you're saying, but you're right. It might just be not a slasher thing. Although, oddly enough, we've watched very few slashes.
I know.
This Terrifier, well, maybe not. Maybe if I'm just not into slashers, we shouldn't.
Well, we'll definitely be doing Halloween Kills when that comes out.
Yeah. All right. So last little exercise before we get into one of our bigger segments. I just wanted to ask you, is there anything here that you think I am very much misrating? Or you are just either surprised or confused why it's rated so highly or rated so lowly?
Sure. Let's see. Well, I already said I feel like I'm surprised a little bit at Dr. Sleep. You explained that one already. Besides
that... Yeah, my 7.6 versus your 6.1.
Yeah. Go up a little more.
No arguments about Black Christmas being 3.5.
Well, 2019, yeah, no.
No, it's 2019.
Yeah, everything else I get, I think.
Yeah, you know, it might be for me the flip side of you. Me wondering why you rated Dr. Sleep as low as you did. It's not a terrible score, 6.1. But yeah, I don't know. I thought it was it's a decent YA movie, competent enough. Nothing angered me about it.
Nothing angered me either. It's just...
Were you bored? What'd you say?
I guess a little. They advertised it so much as a horror movie, and then when it wasn't, that was sort of a bummer. I read the book, but I barely remember any of it because it was so long ago. I don't know. It just didn't have the same, I guess, feeling as I would have wanted it to.
Okay, so then my only other thing is I am wondering why you rated Christmas Evil, one of my favorite movies of 2019, a 7.4, which is not a bad score.
No.
I rated it as 8.4. I'm even, you know, if we were changing all scores, I might even bump it up a couple of points, but... Yeah, 7.4. Do you think that's about where you are at with that? Especially since it kind of falls as a horror.
Yeah, and I mean, I love Cabin Fever. That's a 7.5. I gave it. So, yeah, that's for me. That's a good score. I guess
not better than Joker.
No, I like Joker better.
Okay.
The way it could improve its score is if there were more kills.
Okay, that's fair.
Or like even more like wild kills, or like get more into the grime of, like, I felt like it was moving towards this sort of explosion, this violent or gruesome explosion, and we never really got it. But I loved the build up, and I loved the character, and the sort of aesthetic of the whole thing was awesome. I don't know, and that's maybe me being like maybe wanting to cheapen it a little bit with some more gore. But that's what it would take for me to get my 100% seal of approval.
Maybe that's why I liked it much more than you, because it kind of ended up not being so much a slasher thing at the end.
Yeah,
so.
I think that's what I wanted it to be, a slasher. And yeah, it's more of like a psychotic character study.
Yeah, like a thriller. Okay, cool. So you know what? Let's just do a very quick summary of our top three and bottom three movies, just so everybody knows. I'll let you start first. I can read them out for you If you have any comments to make, make them. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I think it'd just be fun for our audience
just to list them
where we ended up. Yeah. So the worst three movies for Caitlin in 2019 is...
Well, that we covered.
That we covered. Yeah, sorry for the podcast. The worst movie is Black Christmas 2019. Mm-hmm. It Chapter 2. Mm-hmm. And then, I'm surprised about this. It's because, again, we're looking at a list that we're sorting here. So, you know, we don't always see the same views each time. But Dr. Sleep ends up being your third least favorite movie of 2019.
Sorry, that Stephen night. King.
And then the top three movies, starting from, you know,
the third
most favorite movie, Lighthouse.
Yep.
Saw.
Mm-hmm.
And then The Blair Witch Project.
Yep. Okay. I stand by all this, and I still stand by the fact that Blair Witch is a perfect film, 10 out of 10.
Okay, that's fine. I do think Lighthouse, I'm surprised that Lighthouse is not beating out Saw, but... We can just leave it at that.
Saw was more fun.
Okay. So my worst three movies of 2019 that we watched, I am right there with you with Black Christmas 2019, mm-hmm. by far the worst movie. Followed by Season of the Witch, Halloween 3, even though I did end up upping it a little bit more. And then finally, The Taking of Deborah Logan. I honestly, now looking at that, I think that should be... below Dr. Sleep for sure, but I won't pressure you to change.
No.
And then top three movies, starting with the third most favorite, Christmas Evil,
mm-hmm.
Lighthouse, mm-hmm. and The Blair Witch Project.
All right, so we're pretty similar with
the top
two of those.
And then we shared similar Black Christmas
at
the end here. So our least and most favorite are... identical. So that says something about those movies, both of them.
Yep.
How much Black Mirror 2019 sucked and how...
Black Christmas.
Sorry. And then how great Blair Witch Project is. Okay. And finally, today we're going to end on the 2019 Villain Battle Royale. We're going to go through each of the movies we watched for the podcast and talk about who would win and stand victorious at the end of a battle royale after fighting each other. So this is not quite going to be a battle royale. It's just going to be 1v1 situations as we go down the list of movies alphabetically. And then we'll see who continuously knocks the other person off the top and who we end with a final victor.
Sounds good.
So let's just do this, like I said, alphabetically, which coincidentally puts us, this should be an interesting battle, Black Christmas versus Black Christmas, 2019 versus 1974.
So this is Carrie Ewells' army of
angry frat boys.
Versus Billy, the chaotic
attic guy.
But... let me think. So how did they defeat... they destroyed a statue and then... but then they still had to kill them.
Well, apparently that these guys were still full of hate that the black goo didn't do anything, that they were so angry.
Okay. So yeah, I'm just trying to understand. But I also don't think that those guys would fight Billy, because I think Billy is... if they just hate women, right? Then Billy... mm-hmm. they might not want to fight him, whereas Billy, I think, is going to fight anyone. So that he has that on his side. However... the cult is organized. There's multiple of them. They even have, like, archery training, it seems like.
But they weren't particularly good, because think about it. They attacked multiple sororities, and then multiple sororities, like, won.
Yeah, that's true. Like,
they had the jump. They had the weapons. And then these sorority sisters were able to...
Just figure it out in the moment.
I mean, you know, they were murdering them with keys. Not to say that, you know, the women aren't powerful mm-hmm. in their own right, but...
but it was like a sudden attack and they were able to respond. Yeah,
especially incompetent. So, I think for me, Billy gets the upper hand here. He's going to pick them off one by one in their attic.
Yeah, I like that.
I think there's going to be hesitation for all these frat boys to, mm-hmm. like, actually attack Billy, since he is a guy and not mm-hmm. the threat there. So... yeah.
I'm good with that.
So, safe to say, Billy from Black Billy Christmas wins. 1974... beats off Carrie Ewells and his legion of frat boys.
Yeah.
Next, we have Billy and Cabin Fever, which...
the disease that is spread through water and blood and, like, a sex. So, like, bodily fluids and water.
You know, Billy's mostly isolated from that.
But he still has to drink water to survive. Like, eventually he would drink the water. But how long does it take him to, like, finally drink water?
Is there a cure for this in cabin fever?
I don't believe so. It's just, like, as long as you don't drink the contaminated water. Mm. But this means, I don't know, are we assuming Billy's in the are we moving him into the cabin? That's sort of, like, an unfair...
Yeah, maybe cabin fever doesn't get to be in this list because I think everybody has to drink water and then that basically kills everybody.
Sure.
Well, then again, the protagonist in cabin fever too is the distrust that they have in each other, mm-hmm. right? And that kind of neurotic, what do you call it, paranoia that they all have. And Billy is fighting by himself, so he doesn't have to worry about that.
That's true. All right, so I'd say like either Billy won that or we just ignore cabin fever.
About a little bit of both.
Okay.
I think his cabin fever is going to have too much of an edge in most of these fights. So Billy can take this one, too.
All right. Congratulations, Billy.
Billy from Black Christmas 1974 continuing on to fight. I have no clue what this guy. Howard from Christmas Evil.
Yeah. Slash Santa.
Slash Santa. And we discussed on our podcast that Howard slash Santa turns into, he gets magical powers at the end.
Perhaps.
Well, I thought we both agree. Well, you said you appreciated my reading.
Is that fair here?
I think it's fair. I think 100% this guy...
And what exactly are these powers?
Powers of Santa. So he's got a magical van that can fly.
So he can fly around, okay.
He knows inherently who's good and bad.
Okay.
And he's got toys that he can use to stab people with.
Okay.
And the power of good... Actually.
Mm. All right. I think the power of good and the fact that he can fly around in a van will probably put him over Billy or at least help him not get killed by Billy because I don't see Santa being stuck in one location for long enough that Billy would be able to pick him off.
Okay. That's a good point. But I also feel like this.
Because Billy also uses toys to kill, if we're counting that unicorn.
Oh, right. That's a good point. So that's like equivalent. That's mm-hmm. like a sword fight duel that they're going to have a stalemate mm-hmm. in. I think Billy is a tortured soul, right? He's got that Norman Bates thing. So kind of like that Jeffrey Dahmer situation where if he got the help he needed, he probably wouldn't be a sorority killing murderer.
The same with Santa, man.
That's true, but
maybe they should just be friends.
I'm thinking that they would be good friends, but I'm thinking if the guy from Christmas Evil had the powers of Santa at the mm-hmm. end, he would know that Billy is not on the evil book. Billy is just tortured, and he'd probably give Billy the gift of therapy. And then, so they don't actually fight, but Billy ends up getting the help he needs, and Santa wins.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay. All right, so Santa from Christmas Evil.
Moving on.
This was an interesting fight. Santa versus the alligators from Crawl.
Well, I think that van's going to come in handy.
The van's going to come in handy.
Yeah. I think he just flies away from Florida.
I think so, yeah. But then again, maybe the heat might make him feel weak. Being in Florida, being mm-hmm. the hurricanes. I guess alligators, they're not bad either.
No.
They're not.
No, so I think he would feel weird attacking one of them.
Yeah.
But I think he would be able to escape.
Can you remind me, were these alligators in some ways like mega alligators? Did they like say something in the movie that are like...
Oh, no, but there were like an obscene amount of them and they were pretty large too.
They were just regular alligators.
But maybe larger than normal. Mm-hmm. They looked pretty large to me, but then again, I'm not an alligator expert.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think this Christmas van that flies will help him avoid that fight for the first place. Mm-hmm. And I don't think these alligators are like going to find their way to fight him. They're just kind of like there. They're not like evil. They're just like...
Yeah, if you're in their area, they're going to attack you.
Yeah, they're just hungry. All right. And then again, I guess Samara Weaving outlasts. Oh, it wasn't Samara Weaving.
It's because we kept thinking it was her when we first watched it. It's someone who looks a lot like her.
Yeah. And she lived, so I doubt she's more powerful than Santa.
That's true.
Okay.
But she does have her wits more together than Santa does.
Yeah, that's true. All right.
And she had swimming power.
Let's just say Santa's flying in his Christmas van, just waiting the storm out. Mm-hmm. And then these alligators just go home.
Well, actually, she was Apex Predator, but... Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're right. I think you're right.
Okay. So Christmas Evil's, so far Santa's mm-hmm. taking it down, outlasting these guys. And the official line is that these alligators are just weathering the storm and then going to go home.
Yeah.
Okay. This one ought to be interesting. It's going to be Crazy Santa versus Rose the Hat from Dr. Sleep. Rose the Hat and her gang of vampire-esque people. So you got Crow Daddy in there.
And here's the thing. I think they would find Santa delicious because he probably does have a lot of that steam
power. That's 100% true.
And I think Rose the Hat for this one, even though her powers change drastically, and this is another issue I have, her powers change drastically across Dr. Sleep.
Yeah.
But if I'm thinking of her at her, when am I supposed to be thinking of her?
I'd say.
And does she have her whole gang?
I think she has her whole gang.
Okay.
I think it's, think of her at her most powerful.
I think she could win this.
I think she could win this. She's definitely got the loyalty of her gang.
Mm-hmm.
She's got powerful magic and the drive
mm-hmm.
to get Santa's yummy, yummy steam mm-hmm. because he is definitely 100% exuding that to the fullest.
Although he is older, so it's not like young, and apparently child steam is the best, but I think Santa is childlike.
Childlike, yeah.
And he does have like an obscene amount of power more than others, I guess, of his age. Like, he was maybe able to retain his steam mm-hmm. by being so childlike, so he kept that child level of steam.
So he's definitely the juiciest of all
people. Old people, yeah.
Of old people. And also, I think, you know, for as powerful as Santa is, I think he still retains the feeble, weak-willedness of sure. the first guy. So I think they could trick him pretty easily.
I think he'd be very confused, which is
okay. So here's what I'm imagining. The gang definitely kidnaps him, they definitely eat him. Santa mm-hmm. has that horrific death, just like Jacob Tremblay,
sure.
screaming as they take every single ounce of steam from him.
They probably use that snake bite girl because she looks younger.
Yeah,
she could do like the "oh, I'm a nice girl" or whatever.
As long as it's pure and she's not trying to make Santa horny, because that guy is pure. I just want to make it clear.
Maybe she says she's like the little darling from Christmas Evil, lures him somewhere like, "Oh, I need help. Please, Santa, help." And then he's kidnapped.
Okay. Kidnapped and then, horrifically, tragically eaten by the vampire steams. Okay, so Rose the Hat, congratulations, you unseated Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
He took down, at least 4 different people, so we have
no, because Billy was winning for a while.
Billy beat out Black Crisp. Billy beat out Carrie Ewells.
And Cabin Fever.
But then Santa beat out Billy and Alligators. No, I guess that's it. Okay. So Rose the Hat, new champion. Now, next up, Rose the Hat versus, I guess, the corporation from Halloween 3? What was it?
Silver Shamrocks.
They got a catchy jingle. Rose the Hat, do you think they would fall prey to advertising?
I don't think so, because I don't think Rose the Hat or any of the gang would put on those masks.
I don't think so. They don't watch TV, so they're not, like, gonna fall. They kind of live out Halloween by themselves all year mm-hmm. round. So.
Yeah, I don't think they would have to come up with some sort of new product to get them, and I don't think that's fair to invent something for Silver Shamrock.
I think Rose the Hat, too, she's, you know, very bohemian. Mm-hmm. And she's, like, living off the grid. Mm-hmm. So she probably anti-materialistic and anti-corporate in the first place.
Plus, since those masks would be killing kids, and she wants those kids alive for the torture. So if anything, I think she would be upset by the mass child murder mm-hmm. and, like, the loss, the waste of all that good steam. So maybe she would come and attack the CEO of Silver Shamrock without provocation.
I think you're right. I think she probably would see Silver Shamrock as a bunch of feeble humans trying to make use of this magic they don't really know how to control. Yeah. And she'd be upset by that because it's like getting onto her territory.
Mm-hmm. It's wasteful.
Yeah, it's wasteful of delicious child steam. Mm-hmm. Okay, so she would lay waste to them fast.
I think she would be upset and just kill them.
Okay. Sorry, Silver Shamrock. You are out of business by Rose the Hat and gang.
Mm-hmm.
Rose the Hat versus, I guess it'd be that one crazy dude in Harpoon who... Well, I guess he didn't gaslight
her. He was just a nice guy. I think he believed he was a nice guy, but he wasn't actually.
Yeah. You know what? I don't think he stands a chance.
No, I don't think so.
He's got one stupid harpoon. Yeah, spear gun.
And he barely survived harpoon as it was.
Yeah.
Or no, I don't think he even did. Yeah, he didn't survive, so.
No.
Couldn't even survive that, so I don't think he survived at Rose the Hat.
Didn't survive Rose the Hat. Rose the Hat is not even paying attention to him. He's got no magic. He's probably part of that frat boy group over at Calvin Hawkins High, whatever, in Black Christmas.
Calvin Hawthorne.
Calvin Hawthorne in Black Christmas. Yeah, she might... You know what? She probably doesn't even take the time to kill him, and she just lets that other girl from Harpoon kill him.
Yeah.
Do that thing. Okay. Wow, Rose the Hat and gang.
It's very powerful, though, to be fair.
Very formidable. No wonder Danny had such a problem. Mm-hmm. He attended. Oh, now here. Oh, wait. No, we still got Rose the Hat versus the goons from Haunt.
All right. So Haunt is... So Rose the Hat and the gang, they want to go through a haunted house. Mm-hmm. They want to do it off the grid. They want something a little extreme.
So they definitely would be going to this haunted house, right?
I think it makes sense if they wanted to go to a haunted house. I have a hard time imagining them wanting to do this.
Mm.
But team building, maybe they hope that there will be children in there feeling fear and they could just sort of like sniff the air, easily get some steam.
Sure.
I guess. So they go here and they suddenly realize they're trapped. Now... To kill one of these vampires, what did they have to do? I forget.
I think just take... Yeah, just kill them regular. They got killed by guns and bullets.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think
they're not like
then,
immortal or superpower necessarily.
Because I feel like... Because what? They have like hypnotic power and they have like the power to pull your like life force out of your body. I feel like a lot of what Haunt... The house had was not like direct kills. It was like traps.
Yeah.
With no human contact. So I think her gang is going to, at the very least, her gang is going to be cut in half.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
As they move through.
Let's be super liberal because I agree. There's no way that these goons from Haunt will take her out.
Yeah.
Or all of them out. But they are going to their haunted house to feed off of the remnants of steam that children are leaving behind.
Mm-hmm.
And they fall for a couple of traps, especially because, as we saw in Dr. Sleep, some of these guys just get killed by, like, random bullets.
Right.
And
there was that gun at the end, the room with, like, all the traps on the floor or something. I forget.
Yeah. Definitely the traps. They weren't expecting it. So let's just say... Let's be super liberal here and say only Rose the Hat and Crow Daddy make it out.
Ooh, okay, so that's who's going to face the next people?
Yeah,
okay.
Rose the Hat is still around along with Crow Daddy.
Two very powerful beings.
Two very powerful. Haunt, admiral job taking them out for just being regular humans. But that's the advantages you get for having this trap haunted house.
All right.
Oh, this one not looking good for Rose the Hat because she's got to go against... Skarsgård in It
Pennywise.
Chapter 2, Pennywise.
So yeah, I think Pennywise has to win because I don't think Rose the Hat would know how to kill him.
Yeah. Because
to kill him, there's no real way to kill, but just to like make him go back to sleep for however many
seconds. No, there was a way to kill him. You got to belittle him and bully him.
Oh, and then like just kill him like normal, right? Like squash him or something?
Yep. I don't think Rose had any good zingers.
No. And I think she would believe because she is so magically based, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think she would just accept him.
This would be a fierce battle because they would.
They both want the kids.
They both literally want, in a different universe, steam, in a sense.
Yeah.
That's what makes him powerful. I don't think I can see either of them being scared of one another.
No. And that's bad for Pennywise because he needs the fear. But I still feel like Pennywise is such like an old ancient force that I have a hard time. Rose has been alive for a while.
Yeah.
Like centuries,
but
I guess.
But not this ancient.
But yeah, not this ancient. Like, but then again, Pennywise is also killed by 30-year-olds.
Yeah.
So.
Well, 30-year-olds who had enough and have watched a lot of,
I guess, their whole life they've been thinking about
insult comics. Yeah.
Sure.
And they bullied Pennywise to that. All right. Okay, let me know. You can feel free to push back. But can I make a left turn here? Can I say that Rose and Pennywise fight for a little bit?
Sure.
Crow Daddy dies in the mix.
Okay.
Just, you know.
Crow Daddy.
He gets the up. Pennywise gets the upper hand for a little bit. But Rose and Pennywise realize they have a lot in common.
Mm-hmm.
They're out for the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they team up.
And they're going to be going into the next one? That's not fair.
It's actually,
for the rest of
it
these.
It is pretty powerful. I don't know what the rest of them are, so.
Well, we got not even thinking about the rest of them, that's pretty difficult to defeat both of those.
All right, so where do we end up? I will say this. Wherever we end up, one of them is severely crippled, because I think they're pretty even in power levels. Well, I think, I guess, Pennywise does have the ancientness to him, so he might be more powerful.
That's what I'm thinking, but I don't know.
This is
a hard one.
I think Pennywise edges out Rose the Hat.
That's what I'm leaning towards, but I just want to make sure it's not just because Rose the Hat has won so much that I want to give it to someone else. But I think, I don't know, Pennywise does feel more powerful just having seen the movies and reading and whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it's that ancientness and being, I don't know. He has more of a hold on his victims than Rose the Hat does.
So here's the only thing, like, Rose is definitely weaker at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
We saw Pat, our gang's out. She's been in a lot of fights. Pennywise dies eventually to a bunch of 30-year-olds making fun of him.
40.
Yeah. So that doesn't bode well for him.
No.
But I don't know if Rose knows about that weak point.
I don't think so either. And Rose, too. Rose at least has some, like, nice qualities. She has some morality, whereas Pennywise doesn't really have any morality.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that could be used against
her. Let's give it to Pennywise, but let's just say Pennywise definitely gets damaged in the foray. So poor Crow Daddy, too, goes.
Maybe Pennywise is in his, like, 1920s form right now.
Yeah. But I think we can both agree that this is probably the biggest matchup we saw.
Mm-hmm.
Rose versus Pennywise.
Earth-shattering.
Yeah. It's like Dragon Ball Z. This is a probably 40-episode arc. All right. So Pennywise is fighting poor old Arthur Fleck in Joker, or Arthur Fleck as Joker.
As Joker. I think he's got to have Joker powers. That's number one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because this is hard, because Pennywise feeds on fear. And at this point, I don't think Joker really fears much.
I agree.
I don't think there's going to be... And I think seeing another clown, if anything, Joker's just going to think he's a friend.
Yeah. And I think Joker, too, has been on television.
Mm-hmm.
He's, like, learned how to tell it like it is.
Mm-hmm.
He's telling truth bombs that, you know, makes the city rise up. So he might be telling truth bombs to Pennywise and hurting Pennywise's feelings.
That's very true.
And I think Joker can actually belittle Pennywise.
Yeah, I think he could belittle him, and then all he has to do is take a gun out and shoot him, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And I really think at this point, like you said, the biggest asset on Joker's side is I don't think he senses he has fear anymore.
No, I don't.
I think he's pushed beyond the limits of being able to feel fear.
I agree.
Okay.
All right, Joker.
So specifically Joker and not Arthur Fleck.
Yeah. So the part of the movie I'm imagining is when he's being interviewed by Robert De Niro. Yeah. That Joker.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I'm imagining.
Okay. So Joker is now finds himself in the evil machinations of Jigsaw. Jigsaw. What's his name? The clown?
The clown is Billy the Puppet.
Billy the Puppet, controlled by the Jigsaw Puppet Master.
I'm forgetting his name right now. I'm being a bad person.
Okay, well, let's just move on.
Okay, I apologize.
So do you think? I love you, Saul. Do you think Joker?
John Kramer.
John Kramer. Can John Kramer psychologically break down Joker again?
Well, all the other question we have to think about is Joker waking up in a room where he has to screw over other people? Or is he in a room where it's just him and he has to like hurt himself or something in order to survive?
I think John Kramer set this up so he's forcing Joker to recant or repent for his sins in some way.
Okay.
But will Joker do that? Like, does he regret anything? Like, don't you have to regret something for you to pass?
Sort of, but I also feel like it's like your will to survive. So I'm thinking the most clear thing is like Amanda in the first, if we're just talking first Saw, so Amanda's mm-hmm. like a drug addict. Mm-hmm. And she has to prove that she loves life enough, like, because John Kramer views taking drugs as like a, you don't really right, care right. about your life. She has to care about her life enough to carve into someone else's body and take the key out and right, unscrew right. the bear trap from her head and then like live with that. So that's like one thing. And then with, if we're talking about the first one, then Lawrence is cheating on his family. So he has to prove that he cares about his family enough to kill Adam. Mm-hmm. And then Adam or chops off his leg. Unclear if that was like an original plan or not of Kramer. And then Adam, who knows what Adam was supposed to do?
Yeah. Well, that's why the Saw movies don't make too much sense. But anyways, if it has something to do with killing somebody else, Joker's going to do that, mm-hmm. no problem. He's going to get away from that.
And would Joker saw off his own leg to crawl out?
That is the question. I think he would, and I think he would do it with a grin. I think so too.
I could see him doing like a comical, like, here's the Saw.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think Joker is playing. I think Jigsaw's rules mm-hmm. are a lot to do with society's rules.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's where he's basing all these traps and Rube Goldberg devices on. Mm-hmm. I don't think Joker plays by any of those rules. So I think he naturally transcends them and is able to get out of them without, like, breaking a sweat.
I think that's right.
So, okay. Let's just say Joker doesn't, like, kill John Kramer, but John Kramer's traps are unsuccessful. He gets mm-hmm. out of that warehouse.
Is he missing, like, a finger or a foot or anything?
Sure, but he's happy about it.
Well, just to know for the next fight.
Okay, he's missing. Joker makes it out, but he's blind in one eye and missing his right foot.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he's not bleeding out or anything. He got medical treatment. He went to Arkham.
Yeah. In fact, his right foot is now like an actual clown shoe. So he's even more of a clown.
Is it metal?
Yeah, it's metal. It's got a knife, hidden knives inside.
Okay, perfect. Oh, that worked out for him.
Well, this is going to work out even more because his next foe is Art the Clown from Terrifier.
This is a hard one.
I know.
So metal foot with knives in it, but I think Art is almost like an apex predator. He's constantly thinking about the kill, constantly focused.
Plus, Joker, he's got a gun.
And he's got a gun.
We know that gun kills people, so.
Joker, I don't think, is quite as focused on killing or survival. He's just sort of like floating through life and with a lot of anger. Mm-hmm. So it often does lead to killing, but I don't know if he'd have the focus to survive Art.
I think you're right.
Even with the foot.
Art the Clown knows what he's doing. He's hunting him. Not to mention Art the Clown's also immortal, but let's just like not focus on that too much. I don't want to pull that out until mm-hmm. we need to. Mm-hmm. I think Joker is going to go on this monologue about society and mm-hmm. maybe talk to Art about how they should be friends and team up. Mm-hmm. And I think Art's just going to shoot him.
Yes.
He's just going to whip out that gun, which mm-hmm. Joker wouldn't think he has. And then he just shoots him in the head.
Yes.
So goodbye.
I would love to watch that movie though.
And I think at the last second, as Joker lays dying, it's just a scared Arthur Fleck wondering what he has become. And he just dies scared and alone and regretful that he's done all this damage to society.
Never mind, I don't want to see that.
And Art the Clown blows on the smoke of his gun and then saunters off for the next kill.
Both potentially named Arthur there, I just noticed. Yeah,
Art and Arthur. Okay, but this one's going to be a tough one for Art the Clown, because as immortal and existential as he is now fighting the Blair Witch. The Blair Witch.
I guess he would get lost pretty fast. Like, it's sort of hard to say, because it's hard to say what the Blair Witch does.
The Blair Witch messes with people's minds, but I think that doesn't affect Art. I think Art is likes being messed up in the head like that a little bit.
That's true. So I think he'll be laughing through most of that movie, most of what we see in Blair Witch.
Yeah, he's definitely not getting hungry or tired.
No.
He's just having a good time getting lost. Mm-hmm. And then I guess the Blair Witch
When he wanders into that building.
Yeah. He wanders into that building, goes into the corner, and then the Blair Witch, I guess, comes and bites him or whatever she does. I don't know. I don't think the Blair Witch stands much of a chance against Art. Art absorbs the Blair Witch.
I guess, but he would really have to do his research maybe a little bit. And maybe he does based on the opening sequence of Terrifier where he's getting prepared for Halloween night. Maybe he does do some research on Blair Witch before he goes into those woods so he knows how to suck in her essence or whatever. However, if he's not that prepared, I don't know, because it's hard to say exactly what the Blair Witch does.
Yeah. This is a tough one, mostly because of how non-transparent the Blair Witch is with her abilities.
I think because the Blair Witch is so hard to talk about, I don't want to in the future, so I'm going to say Art the Clown wins.
Okay. Art the Clown has a little bit more of a physical embodiment of something.
Yeah.
Well, this is not going to help out too much because the very next one we have is The Lighthouse.
But thank God we don't have to do Lighthouse versus Blair Witch, because I think that would be a bit of a nightmare.
I think that would lead us to an existential crisis.
Yeah, because I don't think either can meet. All right, so...
So who's the villain in The Lighthouse?
We sort of talked about it. It's like The Lighthouse's essence, which contains boredom, ennui, anger, boomer anger in particular.
I don't want to say toxic masculinity, but masculinity driven inwards, which is kind of tears you apart.
Yeah. And it's definitely like a boomer type of masculinity too. Yeah. Like you need to be the one in charge doing the work. You're like telling people what to do.
I honestly think...
And this includes, too, the tentacle monster Cthulhu-esque thing and the mermaid. Like, all the things within the lighthouse's reach.
I think the lighthouse can drive Art to boredom to death. I think, there's nothing to fight in this lighthouse. Art's there for months. Months on end. And he's just too much of a killer man that he just, tears himself apart in this lighthouse.
I think so. I think he would walk into the ocean. When he saw the mermaid, I think he'd try to kill the mermaid. And I think he would walk into the ocean after being bored to try to find the mermaid so he could kill her. And then he would just drown.
Yeah. How about this? Art does a good job in the first couple of months. He kills a whole bunch of seagulls.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of seagulls. But you don't want to do that. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's the only thing he could get his hands on. So he's killing thousands and thousands of seagulls, dead birds littering the beaches, and all that does is anger the sea gods that empowers the lighthouse, and so the lighthouse takes its revenge.
Yep.
Okay. So right, the lighthouse wins. And finally, this one's not too exciting, I think, because it's just a sad old lady with Alzheimer's.
Well, I have a final one after this one to throw in. For a real good finale.
Okay. But let's just quickly... Mm-hmm. Okay, I guess she does have... she is technically this...
A demon? A demon
summoned... No, it's a warlock who summoned a...
Right.
To be demon
power. Serial killer warlock guy.
Yeah, but he's got snake powers, so he's kind of just a shittier Voldemort.
Yeah, and he seems to prefer female bodies for whatever reason. I don't know. I bring that up only because... maybe that would help it against the lighthouse, since the lighthouse is so masculine-focused. But I guess in the end, it's still this guy inside the female body.
Yeah.
But I think that might help him a little bit, at least at the beginning, maybe. Maybe to fool the lighthouse.
Yeah. I think the lighthouse wins at the end.
I think so, too.
Same reasons, art, but less, even less hard.
Okay. And so, yeah, that's all the movies we've covered, but I have a final surprise. Uh-oh. Like, this is Royal Rumble. We have a surprise entrant. And it is McCavity! Oh. McCavity, the magical evil cat from Cats, played by Idris Elba. Specifically that one. He's got magic. He's maybe naked, a little scary to look at. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Cats love to eat seafood and birds.
So I'll tell you what, my opinion, McCavity wins easily.
Because I don't think he would get bored, and I think he could transport himself out of there.
I think he wins because he is too much man for even the lighthouse. The lighthouse implodes. He's too much of a masculine cat. I mean, just imagine when Idris McCavity pops out to the sea, stark naked except for his black fur. Mm-hmm. How much man was that?
That was a lot to handle.
So I think he does that, and then that physical manifestation of the lighthouse literally explodes.
I like that.
And shatters into pieces, and then McCavity says, meow, and then disappears for his next battle.
All right, so that's it. McCavity wins the 2019 Night of the Living Academic Podcast Rumble. McCavity.
And I think that is the best way we could end our 2019 in general.
I agree.
Thinking about
cats.
Cats. Love it.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for joining us, and we appreciate all the people who have been following us. 2020 should be even grander, scarier, spookier, all those things above. So thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Can't wait to the new year.
Yeah. Hope it's good for you as well.
Year podcasting.
Yeah. And don't forget to rate and review if you get the chance. We love to shout out those, especially if you leave a comment.
Okay.
Thank you. I second Matt's Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Bye.
Bye.